Welcome to a podcast of Publishing on Your Own, presented by Patrice Morin-Spatz, co-author of CP Teach Expert Coding Made Easy, and desktop publisher Mark Lerner. This podcast was recorded at the 2012 Text and Academic Authors Association Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. TAA is the only nonprofit membership association dedicated solely to assisting textbook and academic authors to enhance the quality of textbooks and other academic materials by providing them with educational and networking opportunities. For more information about TAA, visit www.taaonline.net.
My name is Patrice Morin-Spatz. That makes my initials PMS. So please just call me Trish. That works for me really well. And I am here as an author and a publisher, and I'm here with my buddy and partner, Mark Lerner.
And I do primarily the desktop publishing and all the other little stuff that falls through the cracks.
What we want to talk to you all about today is publishing on your own. Last year when CP Teach, which is our book, was awarded the McGuffey Award, and I went to accept the award, a lot of people came up to me after that presentation and said, gosh, we'd sure love to do it on our own. Can you please have a seminar next year and show us how to do that? And I said it would be our pleasure. So that's why we're here, basically at popular demand. And we hope to be able to share with you anything. So there is no question that is off the, you know, off. You can feel free to ask any question. We don't know that we'll have the answer, but we'll sure try. So I'll let Mark get started.
Well, first of all, before we start, we wanted to show you this book right here. It's called Body Works. We entered this into the Ben Franklin Award contest, and this past Monday in New York City, it was awarded first place in the science division. So we desktop published this. We wrote it. We did everything ourselves. Just to give you an idea, we'll pass it around so everybody can see it.
We only mentioned that only to tell you that we didn't go through an Elsevier or McGraw-Hill or anybody that's big. We did this all on our own, and you'll see the pictures in there are pictures that we actually got an artist to do, and it's more meant in a way to encourage you and to motivate you that should you be so inclined, you could do this on your own, and we're going to walk you through the steps on how to do that.
In front of you, by the way, is a handout of what we're talking about. If you want to not take this with you, we'll be glad to email it to you later on, or I'm sure you can get it from TAA. But let's go ahead and start. First thing we want to talk about is, what are we here for? My idea is complete cradle to grave of getting published. Everything you need to know in less than an hour, hour and a half. First thing you need to do is start with a dream, a vision, an idea. This may seem simple to you, but it's not always that easy. So what you want to do is really put down in writing what you want to talk about. It needs to be something you're passionate about. I can speak for Trish. I've known her now too long, 13 years. And she started with CP Teach. It is the oldest book in the industry teaching medical insurance coding and billing. I just got through desktop publishing our 24th edition, I believe. So a long time ago, she had this vision when she was working at the American Medical Association to come up with a book to help teach. Do your research. This is where, as a desktop publisher, I find a lot of authors lack. They really don't go do all the research that's necessary.
I'd like to add something on that. When Mark says do your research, we know that you all are all content experts. That's not the kind of research he's talking about, okay? He's talking about research on competition, research on what you want your book to look like, research on, you know, who else is doing the same thing and how you can get better, how you can make a better product.
What you're going to sell it for. All of these things play a key role into whether your book is going to be successful or not. We're going to touch on all of these in a lot more detail as we go through. The next thing you need to do is write it and edit it. This is not always that easy. I've seen great teachers that can't write a book, and I've seen great writers that can't teach. So if you're one that can do both, good for you. Next thing is market. How are you going to market this book? You can write the best book in the world, but if you can't get it out there, you're not going to make any money. You'll have a nice-looking book sitting on a bookshelf. Desktop publishing and printing it. What are the steps that you need to go through to find a good desktop publisher, to get it printed, who's going to print it, how many are you going to print, so on and so forth. And lastly, the sales and distribution. If you go through all of that, and you don't sell it, again, you're stuck with a lot of books. Let's start with your dream, your vision, your idea. These are some questions that I feel like we all need to be asking ourselves. What are you passionate about? What really motivates you? Okay? Most things that I see out there, most books are not new books. They're reinventions. Just like everything out there, you're reinventing what's already out there. You're tweaking it. You're changing it just a little bit, hopefully making it better. What needs to be said? What do you feel like needs to be said? Each of you all are in a different area, I assume. What do you want to say? What are you wanting to publish? Again, all questions you need to ask it yourself. How do I see my vision playing out? You need to think of the start all the way to the finish. How do you see this all playing out? Is this a one-time venture? Are you just going to do one book? Or are you thinking about a whole series? What is your game plan? Will it lead to other things? You need to think about the merchandising side of it. Books turn into movies. Movies turn into all the other things. Look at Star Wars. Perfect example. They make more money off of everything but the movies. And what can I make money at? If you're in this to make money, which I hope you are, what can you make money at? As far as researching, conceiving, and compiling, get your information together, your illustrations. Find yourself, and we'll talk more in detail about this, find yourself a good artist. Who is your target market? This is key. You don't want to put a book out there on woodworking to a bunch of elementary school kids. It's not going to sell. So who is your target market going to be? One of the things I like to tell everybody is, answer this question, why is my idea better than everyone else's? That's going to help it be a better book. Do you have a question? Okay. What price do I need to be at? This is key also. If you come up with a great book and it sells for $50 and everybody else is out there with a book at $9.99, how many books are you going to sell? So you really need to think about that. I've seen a lot of people that have tried to come up with a great book, but they're not successful. And the last thing on this slide is, what is my budget for these areas? Marketing. Have I thought about how much money do I want to spend to market it? How much money do I want to spend with a desktop publisher? And how much do I want to spend on printing? All this goes into the profit that you're going to make. Next, have I developed a timeline? This is very important. All of us have some type of timeline in our days. We get up in the morning, we eat breakfast, we go to work, we come home, so on and so forth. But when do you need this due by? Determine who your contributors are going to be. This is another thing that a lot of people don't think about. Who am I going to get to draw my illustrations? Where am I going to buy them from? Who's the artist going to be? We were fortunate in this book that's going around. We found an artist that worked very cheap as far as we were concerned. We paid her how much?
We paid the artist that you see in that Body Works book $10 a graphic.
And we own the rights.
It gave us the right to the copyright. And further on down in this presentation, we'll tell you how to do that too.
Okay. Have you received any necessary permissions, whether it be copyright or whatever? You need to make sure you've covered your rear end, because the last thing you want is to go through this whole process and have a lawsuit dropped in your lap. Have you obtained an ISSN number? All of these are important if you want to sell your book, because bookstores are not going to take it if there's no ISSN number. And determine the quantity that you need. As far as writing and editing, have you translated what you want into paper, what I'll call your text? Put your ideas down. In listening to somebody this morning, it was a great topic. Take your original manuscript, and you can probably cut out about 25% of it because it's not necessary, whether you're rewriting or whatever. That was a great statement that she made. You need to take what you want, trim it as best you can, get your point across clean and crisp. As far as books, there are some other things that is potential publishers you need to think about. You need to think about a title page, dedication, an epigraph or a small quote, your table of contents, your preface, acknowledgments, notes, appendixes, glossaries, bibliography, reference list, illustrations, including any tables, graphs, charts, list of all those, and any permissions again. All of this is key, because if you go to turn your manuscript over to me as a desktop publisher, I'm going to need this information. It's not my job to go out and find it. So if you want to make your life easier and save a lot of money, when you turn it over to a desktop publisher, please have all of this ready. Another thing you need to think about, determine the size and type of book. It's very important. We wanted a smaller book because in looking at colleges and all, they're usually burdened with huge books, as most of you all know. So we wanted something that's a little bit smaller but gave plenty of information. We narrowed that book down quite a bit.
Not only that, as you look at that BodyWorks book, our particular audience tends to be people who are going to be medical coders and billers, and so they're not looking to get a degree in anatomy and physiology. They're not looking for something overwhelming. They don't need to understand the Krebs cycle. Why would we put that in there? We wanted a book, and we thought that the smaller size book would be a little less intimidating. So psychologically, we were thinking about our audience, and we were thinking, what would appeal to them? And when you publish on your own, you get all that flexibility, and you're able to do it the way you think it should be done.
Our textbook, which won the McGuffey Award, for instance, Trish, when she started, incorporated a lot of cartoons. She actually had a gentleman that was hired by Kellogg's to draw a lot of the cartoons because we understand our demographics, and we understand that the typical, in our case, insurance coder on one of our books is what, Trish? I mean,
the typical insurance coder is someone who has a retail background or pizza delivery. They're on their third or fourth career. They're typically female. They're typically between the ages of, say, 25 and 65. A lot of single moms, a lot of heavy smokers. And so when you look at that demographic and you understand what's important to them, especially the fact that they've been downsized or right-sized, if you want to use a political term, then your book, at least we felt, our book needed to be supportive. So psychologically, we wanted to repeat concepts. Psychologically, we wanted to not use a lot of big words. We didn't want to intimidate them. We wanted it to be something that when they finished the text, they were doing this. I get it. Which brings us to our second point, and I'd like to mention that before Mark gets started on that, talking about size, color, and font. I'm not sure, and I spoke to Sheila this morning, I'm not sure if you all know, there are fonts out there now that are available for dyslexic people. Now, the dyslexic population is a lot bigger than we think. I think the numbers are something like 60% or something outrageous like that of all the people that are out there have some form of dyslexia. The font matters to them. If you're using a font that has a serif on it, like one of these little tails that you can see up here, it's very hard for a dyslexic person to read that. So if you're creating your own product, that font, and you want it to go to a general population, the font choice is going to be important to you. Because if you want it to be available for dyslexic people, there are certain fonts that are easier for them to read. Typically, it's a sans serif, which means without the little tail. And there's even a font called Dyslexi. You can Google that and find that font for yourself and then talk to your desktop publisher about how to use and incorporate that font into your book.
Has anybody here had a book published yet? Good, 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 good. Is it successful, in your opinion? Okay, good, good. I mean, what I find is a lot of people that turn a manuscript over to me is they're not sure about the size. 10-point is great if you got a contract and you don't want anybody to read it. 12-point sometimes is big. 11-point is not bad. It depends on who your audience is. If you're dealing with children, if you're dealing with college-age students, it really depends. If you're adults, it really just depends on your market. Color. Some people are colorblind. You have to keep this in the back of your mind. Most men are colorblind. They don't see as many colors. Okay? We're like Windows. We only see 16 colors. We're not like Windows Advance, where women can see like 254,000 different colors. You laugh, but it's true. Style, too. It's something very important. What type of book are you going to design or publish? You need to think about this. As far as reviewing and editing your manuscript, your book, your article, if it's not outsourced prior to delivery, you really need to have it done. Don't send it to a desktop publisher and expect them to do it. Okay, that's not their job unless you've hired them to do that also. And all. Have it ready when it goes there, so all you have to do is check it as each chapter comes rolling off or whatever you decide. Next point here is get the legal stuff out of the way. there's a lot of times where you're not thinking down the road. Do you have a website to help sell it? Get that out of the way. Make sure you have that. Get the name, any copyrights, trademarks, URLs, anything, any contracts. Get all of that out of the way ahead of time. There's so many things that you don't think about, and that's why we put all these down here.
If you're hiring an artist, for instance, and you are going to be paying that artist to draw pictures for you, then you want to maintain, as the publisher, you want to maintain copyrights on those pictures, which, Michael, you tell me if that's separate than the copyright on the text, but I'm assuming that it is, at least in our case. We copyright the whole thing. We get a copyright on the graphics and a copyright on the text. Yeah. So, you know, for a lot of you who are going through big publishers like McGraw-Hill or Elsevier or whatever, when you hand over your copyright to these guys and they now basically have your copyright, they can take your graphics out that you've paid for and use them in any other publication. So you want to make sure that that's in your, you've paid for that and that's under your ownership as opposed to not owning them from the artist, him or herself. Okay, finding an artist. This is the exciting thing. A lot of people are really intimidated about, okay, I need an artist. I think a picture would, you know, be worth 1,000 words here. But how do I find somebody? There are lots and lots of ways you can find people. You can Google search artists. You can look on a lot of the clip art that's available, and sometimes there's a minimal or no cost for the clip art. What we did in our particular case was, since we're in Dallas, Texas, we went to the Art Institute and we posted an ad, wanted, artist, freelancer, willing to pay $10 to $15 a graphic, need probably over 150 graphics. And we got several people that responded to that ad, and then our next step was, okay, show us your portfolio. What kinds of things do you do? We do medical books, so we needed someone who wasn't afraid and who was familiar with anatomy and physiology. You might have somebody that you have lots of graphs in your text, and you need somebody who's used to making graphs. You might be doing a book on history, and you need them to collate different photographs. Whatever your genre is and whatever is important to you, that's the kind of thing that you post in the ad that you get. You might also check Craigslist. Craigslist, if you've ever Googled under Craigslist or looked at Craigslist, there's a part that talks about creative gigs. And you're able to post an ad on Craigslist for free if you're looking for a particular artist. The main thing that you have to keep in mind, two main things. Number one, you want to own those pictures. So you want to get Michael or someone else to write an agreement for you that that artist signs that says, these pictures are works for hire and I will own them at the end of the day. Because I'm paying you to do these pictures. That's the first thing that's important. And the second thing that's important is that you review their portfolio so that you know the kind of thing that they may specialize in. All of us are writers, but I couldn't write a history book if my life depended on it. So same with artists. Some of them can do cartoons. Some of them can do realistic drawings. It all depends on what you need.
There is something else, too. If you own and when you purchase the rights to those illustrations or whatever, you can put them on sites and make money off of those. Like, there's many sites that I'll go to buy things if I don't have it, and I pay a royalty fee on it. You can upload these things, and they sell them for you. They take a piece of the action, of course, but it's another way for you to make money off of things that you already own.
Any questions so far from anybody? Okay, we're good. Again, formulate in your mind how much you're willing to pay. I've shared with you how much we paid. You get an idea of how big those graphics are. So, you know, one thing I would really highly suggest if you are getting an artist to do graphics for you is for you to decide in advance how big you need those graphics delivered to you in. Can you go through what you went through? Because we didn't ask her.
Well, that was the problem the first time out of the box with Heather Ayling, who we used in Seattle, Washington, I believe is where she is. We didn't specify because we weren't sure at the time also what size the book we really wanted. And so I had to go back and have her redraw a couple of them. It's better to have them draw them big if possible and you can shrink them down and all. But you need to think about what font again you're going to be using and everything else too. But tell her you want them all a certain size or give her the actual dimensions. When I laid out the book finally, I knew exactly what size I needed. I had already set my place card, so to speak, in there.
Now, what we did was we found pictures off the internet or out of books that we liked. Okay, anatomy is anatomy. So if I needed a picture of the intestine and I liked a particular picture that I'd found on the internet of the intestine, but I didn't want all these other words, we would give it to Heather and we'd say, it needs to look something like this. Redraw this. But we don't need all these other words. We just need to know this part and this part. And that's how we did that with her. Sure. Did everybody hear her question? Her question is about plagiarism. How do you avoid plagiarism? And how? What was the second part of the question?
Well, one is that you show them a picture and they virtually copy it, or they go look out on their own and they copy it through on the notes that you think you're getting original creative drawn and not, or they do draw an original creative drawn for you, and you have that agreement and you take that and you don't copy it, but they turn around and they look at something from somebody else.
Okay. Michael, you may want to address that. It's a real legal issue, but let me give you the mic, okay? Let me. Steve, I'm sorry.
Sure, you can do that through a contract, and you should have a contract with anybody who's doing creative work for you, because if you don't, you can't own the copyright. The only way that copyrights can be transferred from the author who creates the work to somebody else is in a signed written agreement. So if you don't have a written agreement, you don't own the copyright in the first place anyway. And one of the other things, the important things that you would do apart from, you know, specifying what they were going to deliver to you and how much you were going to pay for that, is to also include a set of reps and warranties, because you can't know always that their work is original, and so you ask them to promise that it is and to hold themselves responsible to you if it turns out that they're not. And beyond that, about the only other thing that you could do is to have a policy of insurance that we call a media perils insurance policy. If you're publishing on your own, that may be something that you folks plan to talk about. It's not a bad idea. If you're publishing with a publisher, then the publisher is going to cover that.
Mm-hmm.
Media perils.
Yeah, when I'm preparing figures or images for my students in a class that I'm teaching, I'll very frequently take an image off of the internet and open it in Paint and delete the words I don't want, add some words that I do want, and sometimes this is minimal and sometimes it's very extensive. How do you know where to draw the line between your minor changes and major changes?
The answer is that process is flawed from the inception. So one of the rights that belongs exclusively to the copyright owner is the right to make derivative works or adaptations from a work. And any time you employ a process in creating work that starts from somebody else's original work and mechanically captures that somehow when you copy and paste it into Paint, it doesn't matter how many changes you make after that, the process is bad from the beginning. And so that's infringement unless you've got permission. Yes. There are some limited exceptions under a doctrine called the Doctrine of Fair Use for classroom use, but making adaptations of somebody else's work is not, that's not probably part of that.
That's why I usually recommend get permissions in advance, because if you've done that, then it's okay, and if they know that you're not going to be marketing it or mass merchandising it, so to speak, then it's okay as long as you've got it in writing, and you'll probably have to give, you know, credit where credit is due. Next thing I want to talk about is some important numbers. These are some things that most new publishers don't and authors don't always think about. You need to get your ISBN numbers or ISSN numbers. Sometimes the printer will do that for you, but you need to find out. Sometimes the publisher will do it for you. For us, We buy blocks of 100 at a time. It's just so much cheaper than buying onesies and twosies or 10 at a time or whatever. An ISBN number stands for International Standard Book Number. It is what is used worldwide. It used to be 10 digits. All new books have to be 13 digits. And all ISSN number stands for International Standard Serial Number. That is more for periodicals and all. I put this up here just in case you plan on doing periodicals. Both of these are important because they identify what you have to libraries, to other individuals, to anybody out there. And there's too many books out there with similar names. Every year we come up with a new CP Teach book. There is a new ISBN number. Okay, the only time it would stay the same is if you're just doing a reprint. Okay?
That way you can identify this year from last year and so on down the line. And a lot of people who order will give you the ISBN number. And that's how they'll say, I want 24 of whatever the number is, and that's how you identify the book. So getting an ISBN number is really important. R.R. Balker is a company that issues those numbers. At least that's where we get ours from. Okay, and we say we want a block of 100 numbers. They typically vary by the last digit, right? So the prefixes are all the same and then the last digits. But we know that any book that we have, we can then arbitrarily assign it a particular ISBN number that identifies it as whatever book that it happens to be that we assigned that number to.
As far as an ISBN number, do not wait to the very end. It does take a while to get the process rolling. And all, and R.R. Balker is not always the fastest. So if you're serious about writing books, get it in advance. I mean, did you get your own? Okay. See, you're fortunate. Not, it doesn't always work that way, though. Okay, the next thing you need to do is contact the Library of Congress for an LCCN. It stands for Library of Congress Control Number. It's a unique identification number that assigns titles that it's going to likely buy. It's a great way to get your book on a list, and you don't have to do a lot of work. You also need to contact the Library of Congress for a PCN, which is a pre-assigned control number. Basically, what this does is, as it says right here, titles most likely that the Library of Congress, as well as other category books, are going to purchase. These two programs are mutually exclusive, and I'm talking about a PCN and a CIP, which is catalog and publication. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. If you want more information about it, come see me afterwards, and I'll talk to you all about it. Last thing, the cataloging and publication program creates a bibliographic record for forthcoming books. So even if you're not coming out with the book this year, but you plan on it in the future, it gets on a list. So it's something to keep in mind.
So what about the legalities of it all? As we've said before, make sure that everything you have is under contract. And I would highly, highly, highly recommend that if you're going to spend money, this is where you spend it. You can't get a contract that's too good. I mean, the better the contract you can get, the more you're going to be protected. And you're thinking about in the future. That contract is not only going to allow you to have your product and license it to other companies. For example, you might create your product. Now that we own our products, for instance, we could license those products to McGraw-Hill. We could license those products to F.A. Davis or Elsevier. And that's different than allowing just turning over the copyright. Do you see what I'm saying? We can license it and allow them to use it, but that's more in our control. But it all starts with our original contract and what we have from the resources that we used to develop our book in the first place. The same is true on the text, the cover design, the artwork, everything. When you think about a book and you think about the components that we all do as authors, typically what we do is we write the books. Typically, if we have an author-publisher relationship, it's the publisher that gets somebody to design the cover. Important information for you is that there are people who specialize in designing your cover, who may or may not be connected with a publisher. It could be someone as simple as the artist that you hire to do the graphics on the interior. It might be someone who just that's all they do is cover design, and there are people who specialize in that. That's a Google search. Okay, we'd be happy to share some of the people we've used in the past, but Mark typically, as our desktop publisher, designs all the covers. And we debate it back and forth, what we like, what we don't like. We show it to other people. We get input from them. Yeah, I like this, or no, I don't like that color. Or I think that, for example, in the case of Body Works, the original Body Works had the skeleton at the top and the picture of the person with the muscles and stuff on the bottom. And now it's reversed. Or whatever. It was different. It was the opposite of what it is now.
Actually, that was like the third or fourth version, because there were a lot of other things before that. One other thing I want to interject about this is, if you are writing with other people or other people are doing writing for you, you need to make sure that you own the rights to that, or if you all are co-publishing, co-authoring, then you have a separate agreement for that too, okay? There's a lot of legal issues you need to look into.
Okay, if you decide that the printing and distribution side is too much for you, like you've written it, you've gotten it desktop published, but, you know, man, I don't want to print 1,000 copies, or I don't want to have to sit there in my garage and ship it and pack it and all that stuff. If you decide that that's too much for you, there are ways that you can license the product for use by other companies. I know that there's a couple of people that do that through the American Medical Association, and I'm in medical books, so they do that through the AMA. They still own the copyright, but the AMA has the right to actually print copies of those books and market it and distribute it. Okay, let's talk about how to find an editor. How do we find our editor? Well, actually, I had worked with a lady at the American Medical Association who was supposed to do the editing of our book, and 2 weeks before it was due, she had a family crisis and couldn't do the book. So I scrambled. And I was lucky to find a woman named Lynn Stair who specialized in medical-type books. She was such a godsend. Short of that, and I had talked to friends who knew friends, and that's how we got Lynn Stair's name. Short of that, you can go to the Independent Book Publishers website. There is a resource directory there where they will list people who have signed up with the Independent Book Publishers as editors for books. Typically, they freelance. What's important for you to know and for you to ask them is, what genre do they specialize in? Lynn Stair happens to specialize in medical-type publications. There are other people who specialize in history. Having a specialization is important because then they read your text with a different eye. For example, if you're a history buff and you say that, you know, Columbus sailed across the ocean in 1495, they're going to catch that as a typo because they know history. And so that kind of thing is important. You can also go to the TAA website. There is, under the links section, there is an author resources section, which also lists some editors there. And I would really encourage you to take advantage of what the TAA has to offer with reference to its links section, because there's a ton of resources on there. You can also inquire at your local community college or your local university. There are people who are specializing in journalism. There are people who are specializing in English. There are people who are getting their PhDs or their masters. And they're always looking for freelance type work. Again, another search possible, and I don't know if it's on the next slide, would be to go to Craigslist. That's always an option. You can visit these sites, the Freelance Editors Association site or the Consulting Editors Alliance website. And they will also give you more information about getting an editor. It's a really critical component of your writing because it takes what you know so well and what you think you've explained well, and it has that critical eye on it to say, you know what, Trish, you got really pretty wordy here. You need to cut out half of this because you're too wordy. And I remember the very first time that I got my first manuscript back from the editor, I was amazed. It sounded so much better than what I had given to her. And I have a tendency just to speak from the hip, and I write the same way. I just write it like I would say it in class. And I've taught over 35,000 people, so I write it like I say it in class. And sometimes that doesn't really come across well in a text. And so the editors can help you with that.
Well, how many of you, when you were going to school, college, whatever, had that deer in the headlight when you were listening to a professor speak? They just basically bored you. They rambled on and on and on. It's sort of like that in books. So you really need to cut a lot out.
It can be. Now, wait, please go back. One of our editors, we pay $10.50 an hour to. That can go all the way up. I think Lynn Stair, if I'm remembering right, was somewhere between $35 and $45 an hour. Now, that may sound intimidating because you're thinking, how would I ever afford that? You'd be surprised at how many pages they can do in an hour. And they can also give you an estimate. For example, if you handed them your text and you said it's a 250-page text, they could say, well, that's going to take me about, and then they'll fill in the blank, that'll take me about 15 hours, or that'll take me about 20 hours. And they can give that information back to you so that you get a really good handle on what your expenditure's going to be. Okay, what do you ask an editor? How do you really pick one? You want to find out what they specialize in. And some of them will say in their bios, they'll say, I specialize in this book or that kind of book. You want to find out what their charges are. Do they charge by the hour? Do they charge by the job? How many pages can they do in an hour? These are things that we've already discussed. Are they a developmental editor? In other words, do they help you develop your manuscript? Is that their forte? Will they say to you, Sheila, I think you need to start with this concept, and then you need to move into this concept and that concept? Or are they going to say, no, just take it however you think it? And a developmental editor will help you develop your concept and help you come up with your outline on what would be the best kind of book you could write. A substantive editor helps you identify and solve problems of clarity and writing style. For example, what I was talking to you about earlier about getting too wordy, I have a tendency to over-explain. And this kind of editor will help clarify the writing style. They'll help you say it in a way that makes sense. A copy editor is going to correct the spelling and grammar. A proofreader is just going to compare the last part of your text to what your original text was and make sure that the content isn't lost and that it's proceeding along fine. There are some people who can do all of this. What you need to find out is which portion of these do you think that you need? Do you feel comfortable with how you've stated things? Are you happy with that? Well, then maybe all you need is someone who's going to look at your grammar. And it all depends on you. But that's the freedom and the elbow room you get when you do this on your own.
So basically, are you going to find an editor that's going to catch this? Or are you going to find someone that's going to miss it and then it's going to end up in your book?
Big one, that last point. What time frame can they commit to? That's going to be critical. If you, for example, when you go to print, we know that school for our classes start January the 15th typically. We also know that our print time is going to be about 3 weeks depending on the time of the year we print. So if we need to have the books to the school, let's say by January the 10th, print time is 3 weeks, so we back that up. How long is the editor? What's the desktop publishing time? Back that up. And you see how you keep continuing, you keep backing up so that you can find out, okay, when do I need to start the editing process? And how long is that going to take? Because after that, it goes to the desktop publisher. And after that, it has to go back to the editor and so on down the road.
Okay, what is a desktop publisher? This is my specialty. We're cute, we're handsome, we're in some cases pretty. We're funny, we're creative, we're fantastic, we're full of it. Basically, that's who we are. But I'm not going to read this all. I mean, we work with a lot of different things. And we can take your idea and get it to where it can be a book. That's it in a nutshell. If you want me to read this, I will. Everybody is different as far as how long it takes. I've been doing this long enough. I did more than 5,000 pages in less than 90 days. We publish about 10 different books, and they're all due about the same time. So lucky me. If we do any more books, we're going to have to find somebody else to help me with the load because I just can't do that. My wife wants to see me in December. Okay. Why a desktop publisher? Well, first of all, we do need the job. We have expertise in areas that you may not. Most people that are wanting, like you all, don't have the expertise like I do with the software and with everything else that goes with it.
I'd like to add something here. What Mark does for me is he takes my handwritten notes or he takes my Microsoft Word or my Microsoft, whatever desktop, whatever, what do you call it, program you use, he sucks it into InDesign. I'm on a regular PC. He's on a Mac. So he sucks it into his Mac, and he pretties it up. What I hand him that looks like such chicken scratch, and there's things in the margin and all that stuff, and the paragraphs aren't in good format, Mark does all of that for me.
And her handwriting's pretty bad, let me tell you. It really is. She should have been a physician. We understand the many steps that are required to get a successful book out. And lastly, we allow you to do the things that you're good at, and that's write about the subject that you're passionate about.
Okay, so how do you find a desktop publisher? Well, Mark was a tenant in our building, and he happened to say that he wanted to try it out, and he did, and he happens to excel at almost everything he does. So that was lucky for me. Short of that, I would have used Craigslist. I would have done a Google search. I would have checked with the Art Institute. A lot of these art schools teach the program, which is called InDesign. That's the one that a lot of the printers who will actually print your book can accept and print off of. Mark will actually take the book that we do and basically, in layman's terms, email it to the printer. But his computer, Mark's computer, has to communicate with the printer's computer, and they don't accept all of the desktop publishing type programs. A lot of them help accept InDesign, and that's why he chose InDesign. A lot of the local art institutes teach InDesign. However, I would caution you, if you decide to go through this route and pick an artist from a school, you have to see a portfolio. We made a huge mistake when Mark was overwhelmed at one point, hired a person from the local art institute. They did have InDesign experience, but they had never done a volume or never done a book the size of what ours was. And it was a nightmare. And we didn't know. We didn't know that we needed to make sure that they had actually done real books. This person had done lots of brochures. This person had done a lot of annual reports, but they had never done a book. And so that's going to be critical for you to make sure that they have some background in books.
InDesign, let me say this, is an Adobe product. If you're not familiar with it, Adobe is one of the largest, if not the largest, in the world. I use their whole creative suite, so I do a lot of different things with Illustrator, Photoshop, so on and so forth. There are definitely discounts that are available to those in academia, so I would recommend looking into that if it's something that you want to try doing yourself or whatever. Students also can get a big discount also, so it's not a cheap program. And it depends on what all you want to buy from them.
But the advantage of a program like that is that anything, when you really start to analyze what the finished product is going to look like, you know, Mark can suck in a picture and put it in the middle of the page. You and I, if we're just using Microsoft Word, can't do that and have the text actually wrap around the picture and make it look good. InDesign can do that. So how much are you going to pay? Starting, you're looking at about $17 an hour, and it can range all the way up, okay? You can get some people to do it by the project, and you can show them the project and say, give me a project price. Again, going back to the contracts, if you're going to be doing it by the project price or even by the hourly, I would ask them for a guaranteed minimum or a guaranteed maximum. Like, okay, I'll pay you $17 an hour, but what's the maximum out-of-pocket expense I'm going to have so that you can contain your costs? Yes, I need to give you the microphone so we can ask the questions.
Okay, so on average for a 250 to 300-page book, how much would that cost for?
Well, let me answer that. There is no set answer. It really is going to depend on what the desktop publisher is going to be doing for you. In my case, I'm doing a lot of things, and in some cases more than an average desktop publisher. So it depends on what you want done, okay? It depends on what their experience is. I'm going to charge more than somebody that's only done one book, maybe. I mean, I've been doing this now for 12 years, basically. So my price is going to be a little bit more. I've got more invested into it. I've also got a better background than the average person out there. I know that doesn't answer your question, but it depends on the size of the book. It depends on what else you're going to be adding into it. You know,
there must be an industry range somewhere, right?
I would probably say anywhere from $25 to $35 an hour would be a good average? I mean, if you can get somebody at 17, great. I would be a little skeptical, though, personally, because I wouldn't work for $17 an hour at all. So we can talk about a raise, Tricia.
Oh, that was my question. I mean, I know that it probably varies by area of the country and
exactly.
The kind of intensity of graphics and so forth. But, you know, just knowing what the typical upper level limit is for somebody starting out, you don't want to get scalped.
No, I agree with you.
So you think 35 is a...
I think that might be on the higher end for just someone that's doing desktop publishing. And again, I give you the caveat that it depends on what else is being done by the
desktop. Do you recommend getting multiple quotes?
Yes, definitely. Definitely look at their portfolio like Tricia talked about also. I mean, it's key. Find somebody that's done something in the genre that you were working on. I mean,
and is it reasonable to ask the person what their rate was for those
sure.
kinds of products that they did so you can look at the range?
Sure, and I'd also ask for some references of people they've worked with and see if you can contact them, see if they're telling you the truth, because if they're not telling you the truth, do you really want to work with them?
So there's nothing really special about it. It's just general good business sense.
Exactly.
Okay.
My opinion.
One thing I want to point out, and when it sounds like Mark is really giving y'all sort of a catch-all answer, and he says it depends on what the person is doing, what he really means by that is what Mark does for me is he does all of the cover design, he incorporates all of the graphics, he does my entire index, which I never have to do, he runs all of my spell checking, he finds pictures for me that I didn't know I wanted. He makes suggestions on where they should go. So literally, all I do is write. That's fantastic, and I'm willing to pay for that because all that other stuff, like cover design and stuff, I don't really want to do. I don't really want to decide where the picture goes or how the text wraps around it or what font looks good and what size the font should be on this heading or that heading. I don't want to do that. So if you've got all that nailed down and you've already got your cover design and you know that the picture has to go right here, that's a whole different story. But he does an awful lot that really doesn't meet the eye when we really see the finished product.
Excuse me, but so in your case then, in your example, how much did your book cost?
We never qualified it because he's paid on an annual salary.
Right. Now, the other thing
we do about 8 books a year. So Mark does all of those books on an annual salary and handles all of that stuff for us. And he also, if that's not enough, we also own a building, and he's the general manager of the building. So he's handling toilet paper, and there's wasps outside, and the air conditioner needs a new filter. He's everything to me.
It's never dull. Let me say that. I also do something that she did mention. I am the one that deals primarily with the printers, distribution, and everything. So you need to find out and qualify exactly what they're going to be doing, and it needs to be, if they're not working for you, it needs to be clearly delineated in a contract.
What he means by dealing with the printers, he actually farms out the job through an RFP and says, we're going to need X amount of books by XYZ time frame. We need them in a 6x9 format. It's going to be 250 pages with color graphics and perfect bound as opposed to spiral bound, whatever. He does all of that with the printers and negotiates. And he's not afraid, and nor should you be afraid, to say, you know what, you need to sharpen your pencil on that one, when they come back and they give you a quote. And we've saved thousands of dollars because of his hard work.
I definitely play one printer against the other. This is how much, because they all know each other in this industry, believe me. All the printers know each other. Okay, finding a desktop publisher, as far as what questions need to be asked, should they be in-house or outsourced? By in-house means they work with you, work for you. Okay, there's advantages, they're paid a set salary. You don't have to pay them anything else. Outsourcing, you've got a little higher cost sometimes. You know, you need to make that decision. If you're an individual, you're probably going to have to outsource it unless you know somebody that can do it for you. What is their level of expertise? I've already touched on this. You need to find out how good they are. You just don't want to hire the first person you talk to. What are their abilities, limitations? I mean, do you expect them to work on the cover, like Trish said, the interior, the indexing? Some people will farm out the indexing to somebody. they'll farm out the cover to somebody else. So if you can find somebody that can do everything, it's one less person you have to deal with, okay? Trish just knocks on my door and bothers me when she has a problem. She doesn't have to go to other people. Do they have a portfolio of samples? We've already talked about that. And again, are they going to be designing the cover? Our samples, if you want, are on the table out front. They're by the poster that's on the easel of the Texty Award winners and all. We set them out there a couple hours ago. So afterwards, if you want to see them, you can see some of the samples of what we've done. And each of them are a little bit different. How many other projects do they have? This is a key question you need to ask. Are they going to be able to hit your timeline? I mean, I can't handle any more books towards the end of the year. I just am one person, and I just can't do it and keep my sanity anyway. Have they worked on other projects that are similar? Just like an editor, if they're familiar with the genre that you're working in, it makes it a little easier sometimes. What problems do they see? Working with an editor or desktop publisher, you'd be surprised. They're going to think of things that you have not even begun to think of. Okay? So they're going to be able to say, well, you know what? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about this? These are key things you need to be asking. Will they be outsourcing anything? If you go to me as a desktop publisher, you need to know, am I going to get the pictures from someplace else if that's my job? Do I have a contract with somebody else? You know, it's all those legal issues. Can they offer you experiences and feedbacks to save you time and money? These are sort of similar. But, you know, have you thought of this, Trish? If we did this, this, and this, we could save ourselves a lot of money. We can use the same cover next year, just change the number or whatever it is. So these are all things that you need to think about. Good question. How will I communicate with them? One of the problems that I see is communication. If you can't get in touch with the person you're working with, you've got a problem. You need to make sure you've got more than one phone number and an email to get in touch with this person, because you need your book when you need your book. It can't be just put off forever. And a lot of times, somebody may disappear on you. Always have a backup desktop publisher in mind if you can. Do I have or will I have a difficult time reaching them? That's a question, again, that goes with communication. How often will I be checking or editing their work, their progress? One of the things that Trish and I have developed over the years is when I'm through with a chapter, she looks at it. We have other people that look at it. Okay? So I'm not waiting to the end as a desktop publisher. And in your case, a 200, 250-page book, you have to read it all and then come back to me. It's easier to do it one chapter at a time. Then if you're using some of the other editors, whether it be a copy editor, whatever type, they can also be reviewing it and making changes as necessary. What additional costs are there? You need to find out. Hey, Mark, I'm hiring you. What other costs are hidden that you're not telling me about? Make sure you know up front if there's going to be any other cost. And make sure you have a contract. I mean, that is key, unless they are working for you or with you as part of a company. Do they understand exactly what I want? We butt heads a lot, and we're best friends. But we know at the end of the day, or I know exactly what she wants done, and I'm able to accomplish it. You need to have that feel good confidence about the person you're working with. Do they understand the due date? Again, it's very key. Can they make my due date? Or are they just saying it to get the job? What are the penalties if they don't hit your due date? That's something I recommend in a contract. If they don't hit the date that it's due, is there penalties to them? Right. Because you know what? That's going to make sure they stay on time. Are they able to work with the printer? So in my case, I'm working with a printer. If you hire a desktop publisher, are they the one that's going to go out and find the printer for you? Do they have a printer they can recommend? These are questions that you might want to ask yourself if you're not going to do it.
How do you find a printer? Again, there's lots of resources that you can have available to you. One that I happen to like is the TAA website. I also like the Independent Book Publishers Association site. There, you can put out an RFP, request for proposal, on some of these sites, and it goes out to lots of different printers, okay? And you can say, I want a 6x9 book, and I want it perfect bound, which is what the binding is of the one that we've passed around. You might be doing a cookbook, and you could say, I want a 6x9 book, but I want it to be spiral bound. Different printers specialize in different kinds of books, okay? I was telling Sheila this morning that you might want a 6x9 book, but this particular printer may specialize in an 8.5x11 size, So the price they're going to come back to you might be much greater than the printer that actually specializes in the size that you want. And so you want to check and find out. We are shocked whenever we get our quotes at the difference in prices for what really is the same product. And it's only because of the specialties that these printers actually have and the way that their presses are actually set up, how they're set up. So these are two good sources: independent book publishers, the TAA website. Lightning Source is connected with
Ingram Books.
Ingram Books.
With that.
And so we have never put our books on Amazon. But because we went through Lightning Source, which is a print-on-demand company, where you can get one book, you can get 1,000 books. But because we went through them, we were automatically somehow magically connected to Amazon. So if you were to Google on Amazon, CP Teach, you'd find us. But I can swear on a Bible, we never actually formed a contract with Amazon. I think that that's Lightning Source actually did. Total Printing is a company we've used a lot. I'm not trying to push them. They've worked with us a lot, though, and I wanted you to at least have their name.
As far as finding a printer and choosing a printer, what type of book can they print? These are questions that you need to ask the printer, because not everybody is going to do a 6x9. Can they do a perfect bound, spiral, hardbound? What type do they do? Do you want it thumb tab? I mean, there's a lot of different questions you need to ask. And before you ask, you need to decide in your mind what type of book you really want to publish. Okay? Can they print in color and black and white? Not everybody prints in color. Okay, so you need to decide. When we went with this book, most of ours are primarily black and white, so we had to find a different printer. What sizes of books can they print? Again, Tricia already mentioned that. What is their turnaround time and delivery date? You have to keep this in mind. Our books come out, for example, in December, so schools have them in January. I have to get them to them in plenty of time because they usually shut down for the holidays, or they have so many other books because they're trying to do the same thing for everybody else that wants to desktop publish out there. So you need to find out what their turnaround time is and can they hit your delivery date. Okay?
Keep in mind on your delivery date that it's not just when they finish printing your book. It's really when they're able to ship your book and you're able to have it in hand. Because from the time you receive it in your hand or your garage or office or wherever you're going to get that book, then you need to then be able to ship it out from there.
To give you an idea, Baker & Taylor and Lightning Source are both print on demand. If you were to get them the manuscript and all, the turnaround time between getting the blue copy, which is your proof basically, getting it printed, getting it shipped, can be as much as a month. Okay? It really depends on the time of year. So you need to keep that in mind depending on who you're using. You need to find out what your minimum run is. This is going to figure into your cost. If you're printing one, you may spend $18 for a book. If you're printing 1,000, you may only spend $3. Okay, the other thing to keep in mind is whether you use a U.S. printer or if you use one overseas. The advantage of using one overseas in most cases is it's a lot cheaper. The disadvantage is you take a chance of your ship sinking, which has happened before. It can get caught up at the docks waiting for inspection. They can print it wrong, even though you may have somebody you trust over there. So there's a lot of things to keep in mind. You know, for us, because everything's time sensitive, we choose to get printed in the U.S., and we recommend that.
That's what I was going to say. If you have an annual publication, an annual text that you update yearly, we really would not recommend that you go to a foreign press. Because by the time you get it, you got to plan on about 2 months. And by the time it goes through customs and everything else, and then you've only have a 10 months left in the year.
I mean, I've known people that have had things stuck in customs for months. And also, you have to decide, is it worth the saving of money? You need to find out what type of printer. Do they do just print on demand? Are they a standard digital or whatever type of printer out there? It's cheaper if you've got the printing press where you can just start running them out and you're doing thousands, but do you need 10,000 books? Or are you going to be stuck with 10,000 books? Because Trish can tell you, when she started in the business, she had a whole bunch of books printed, didn't you? What happened?
We used to have to do runs of 1,000 books at a time just to get our price point down. And, you know, so that's scary because you're shelling out 50% down. And if you're doing a run of 1,000, at that time our books were around $3.50 each. That's what it cost me to print them. So $3.50 each times 1,000 books on my workbook, that's $3,500. And then my textbook was a little more expensive than that. So I would have an outlay of about $8,000 and 2,000 books in inventory. That's scary because you got to make sure you sell those books. We got to start wrapping it up.
Okay, what are their setup fees? How about fees for change or reprint charges? These are questions you need to ask them also. Do they offer price breaks on volume? All of them do. What are their price breaks? That's very important. What thickness of paper do you want? Most printers have one size that's considered their stock, okay? And it's going to vary depending on the printer. If you want it thinner, it may cost you more. If you want it thicker, it may cost you more. But you need to decide on what thickness you want your paper because that's going to add to your cost of shipping and everything else. And do they print just white? Is it cream? What color is it? Ivory? Linen? Whatever. Do I want to print in the U.S.? We talked about this. Do they do shrink wrapping? Can they include a CD? Can they perforate or do thumb tabs? And what type of proof? Can I approve it just online or am I going to get an actual physical copy? Those are questions that you need to ask.
Okay, we've talked about who's your target market, how do you make your product better. We've talked about a lot of this stuff. But basically, now that you have your product, how do you sell it? Okay, are you going to go through a distributor? Like these are companies that wholesale. You let them inventory your stuff. They may buy it in quantity from you, and you might give them a 60% discount, and then they pass part of their discount on to the actual buyer. I think we should just let them read this. You can blog about your book. That's real key. This group, Haro, and Sheila, I didn't tell you about this. This is called Hire a Reporter. Hire a Reporter Out. This is a really good website to get involved with because you have an expertise in something. Once you get involved and you post your information on this website, reporters can come contact you about your particular expertise. What does that do? Well, if they publish an article and it has your name in it, all of a sudden your Google ratings go up. Why is that important? Well, because if you published a book and you want book sales, having a high Google rating is going to help you. Doing a book signing is also a good idea at a bookstore, and they love to do that. We did one on Body Works, and the author was able to sign a lot of books there, and it boosted our ratings. Make your book available to reviewers. For those of you who are teachers, I know that you've reviewed books. You may have been paid for that review, but at the end of the day, if it was a textbook company that paid you for the review, how cool was that? At least you got to really look at the book carefully, as opposed to companies like me who send out freebie books, have people thumb through them, and they never really closely look at the book. We're going to start paying people to review our books, especially in the schools that we want to really consider looking at our books, simply because they'll take it seriously. Additionally, it allows us input on how to make a better book, and it gives us fodder that we can use in our advertising. Okay? Send out CDs, purchase mailing lists if you need that. Place your reviews on websites. There's a free PR website that should be on your
handout,
but you can upload press releases to that, and it goes out to a million different things. We got to tie it up. So we apologize. We'd love to spend more time with you. We are available at the end of this session. It's obviously we need our time is up. We got carried away. But we're available to you if you have any further questions. And thank you so much.
Publishing on Your Own is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.